Today is the 23rd day of March. Today is my wedding anniversary to my wife, Jill. So, happy anniversary to Jill, my wife. But, well, I suppose anybody who's been married for any length of time, if you step back and look at it, every anniversary is a miracle. Right? It's the most beautiful, most challenging thing to be in a covenant of marriage. And if you stay with it long enough and not give up, well, every way that that can be challenged will. So I guess the truth is, for us to have had even a first anniversary is a miracle. But for us to get to 29, well, that's thousands, if not millions, of miracles. We should not have made it. We should not have made it this far. Nor should the Daily Audio Bible ever exist, like all of the things that our lives are made up of now. All they are is us walking in grace. True, unmerited favor. If we had gotten what we deserved in our lives, I have no idea where we'd be. We would not be together. We definitely wouldn't be here on the Global Campfire, having built a safe place that we need so desperately in our lives each and every day, and the Word of God to direct us in every possible way. I don't suppose that me sharing this is something that you, if you have been married more than like a month, cannot relate to on some level, but to spend your life with somebody, to actually see over the years the depths the love can actually be, what that will require in sacrifice and mercy and forgiveness, and what that will yield, it is the greatest gift in all of humanity. At least in my experience, there isn't anything higher or lower. There isn't anything deeper than true love. But true love costs everything. Which is why marriage, especially even in scripture, is such a metaphor, a picture of God's depth of love, true, sacrificial, unfailing, unyielding, uncompromising, unconditional love is the picture of what is available and what is true. And so I suppose in commitment and relationship to God, and in commitment relationship to our spouse that we are in covenant with, there is nothing that will be more difficult, but nothing that will be more rewarding. Nothing that will not take us to the ends of our very selves and then show us what being one with someone else can do and can be, and discovering what true union is. Which again is a picture of union with God. So, did not turn the mic on planning to say all that. That just came kind of bubbling out. But Jill and I will be here at the end for whatever this is that we're calling 29. And I am grateful. So thanks be to God. Or as Jill and I say now because of our Jordanian guide, thanks God. Anyway, welcome around the Global Campfire today. Thank you for letting me have this little campfire chat. We're here, though, to take another step forward as we continue the journey through the scriptures. This is a day of transition. We are going to conclude a book in the Old Testament and enter a new one. So we will conclude the book of Numbers today. and then move our way into the book of Deuteronomy, the last book of the Torah. So we'll talk about Deuteronomy, kind of do a little flyover of what we're about to read when we get there. But we have to finish the book of Numbers first, and that concludes with chapter 36. The family heads of the clan of Gilead, son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, who were from the clans of the descendants of Joseph, came and spoke before Moses and the leaders, the heads of the Israelite families. They said, "When the Lord commanded my Lord to give the land as an inheritance to the Israelites by lot, he ordered you to give the inheritance of our brother Zelophehad to his daughters. Now suppose they marry men from other Israelite tribes. Then their inheritance will be taken from our ancestral inheritance and added to that of the tribe they marry into. And so part of the inheritance allotted to us will be taken away. When the year of Jubilee for the Israelite comes, their inheritance will be added to that of the tribe into which they marry, and their property will be taken from the tribal inheritance of our ancestors." Then at the Lord's command, Moses gave this order to the Israelites: "What the tribe of the descendants of Joseph is saying is right. This is what the Lord commands for Zelophehad's daughters. They may marry anyone they please, as long as they marry within their father's tribal clan. No inheritance in Israel is to pass from one tribe to another, for every Israelite shall keep the tribal inheritance of their ancestors. Every daughter who inherits land in any Israelite tribe must marry someone in her father's tribal clan, so that every Israelite will possess the inheritance of their ancestors. No inheritance may pass from one tribe to another, for each Israelite tribe is to keep the land it inherits." So Zelophehad's daughters did as the Lord commanded Moses. Zelophehad's daughters, Mahlah, Tirzah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Noah, married their cousins on their father's side. They married within the clans of the descendants of Manasseh, son of Joseph, and their inheritance remained in their father's tribe and clan. These are the commands and regulations the Lord gave through Moses to the Israelites on the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho. Okay, so that concludes the book of Numbers. And so we're going to enter the final book of the Torah, or the Pentateuch. This is called the book of Deuteronomy. And it is a very important ending to the Torah. The coming days as we read through Deuteronomy might feel like review, like I've heard this, we've already heard this before. Like we've covered this territory before. And that would be accurate. We have. Not in exactly the same words, but the stories may be familiar to us. But there is a specific reason for that. A very specific gravity and intention behind Deuteronomy. As we know, even from the book of Numbers, Moses is reaching the end of his time as the prophetic leader of the children of Israel. This is the Moses that took the people out of Egypt, right, with all of the plagues, led them all the way for the rest of his life. I mean, really had to deal with the transformation of a people, including the end of an entire generation in the wilderness, only to bring them back to the precipice of going into the promised land that he's not going to lead them into. So Moses is now at the end of his life. His brother Aaron has died. Like he is at the very, very end of his leadership and at the very end of his life. And so the book of Deuteronomy is Moses gathering all of the people together. These are the last things, his final discourses, the last things he has to say to the people he has led this far. And he wants to leave nothing unsaid that needs to be said. He wants to strive to remind the people who they are and how they got to where they are standing that day and where they are going and who God is and what they are going to face, the challenges that are yet in front of them. And so when we read Deuteronomy in that light, understanding that's what it is, then we can put ourselves in this throng of people, this nomadic people who have been wandering. They are standing there, listening carefully to the only leader they have ever known speak his final words, and they will resonate all the way into our hearts today. So let's begin. Deuteronomy chapter 1. These are the words Moses spoke to all Israel in the wilderness east of the Jordan, that is, in the Arabah, opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hazeroth, and Dizah. It takes 11 days to go from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by the Mount Seir road. In the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, Moses proclaimed to the Israelites all that the Lord had commanded him concerning them. This was after he had defeated Sihon, king of the Amorites, who reigned in Heshbon, and at Edrei had defeated Og, king of Bashan, who reigned at Ashtaroth. East of the Jordan in the territory of Moab, Moses began to expound this law, saying, "The Lord our God said to us at Horeb, 'You have stayed long enough at this mountain. Break camp and advance into the hill country of the Amorites. Go to all the neighboring peoples in the Arabah, in the mountains, in the western foothills, in the Negev, and along the coast to the land of the Canaanites and to Lebanon, as far as the great river, the Euphrates. See, I have given you this land. Go in and take possession of the land the Lord swore he would give to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and to their descendants after them. At that time I said to you, you are too heavy a burden for me to carry alone. The Lord your God has increased your numbers, so that today you are as numerous as the stars in the sky. May the Lord, the God of your ancestors, increase you 1,000 times and bless you as he has promised. But how can I bear your problems and your burdens and all your disputes all by myself? Choose some wise, understanding, and respected men from each of your tribes, and I will set them over you." You answered me, "What you propose to do is good." So I took the leading men of your tribes, wise and respected men, and appointed them to have authority over you as commanders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens, and as tribal officials. And I charged your judges at that time, "Hear the disputes between your people and judge fairly, whether the case is between two Israelites or between an Israelite and a foreigner residing among you. Do not show partiality in judging. Hear both small and great alike. Do not be afraid of anyone, for judgment belongs to God. Bring me any case too hard for you, and I will hear it." And at that time I told you everything you were to do. Then, as the Lord our God commanded us, we set out from Horeb and went toward the hill country of the Amorites, through all that vast and dreadful wilderness that you have seen. And so we reached Kadesh Barnea. Then I said to you, "You have reached the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us. See, the Lord your God has given you the land. Go up and take possession of it as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, told you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged." Then all of you came to me and said, "Let us send men ahead to spy out the land for us and bring back a report about the route we are to take and the towns we will come to." The idea seemed good to me, so I selected 12 of you, one man from each tribe. They left and went up into the hill country and came to the valley of Eshcol and explored it. Taking with them some of the fruit of the land, they brought it down to us and reported, "It is a good land that the Lord our God is giving us." But you were unwilling to go up. You rebelled against the command of the Lord your God. You grumbled in your tents and said, "The Lord hates us." So he brought us out of Egypt to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. Where can we go? Our brothers have made our hearts melt in fear. They say, "The people are stronger and taller than we are. The cities are large with walls up to the sky. We even saw the Anakites there." Then I said to you, "Do not be terrified. Do not be afraid of them. The Lord your God, who is going before you, will fight for you, as he did for you in Egypt, before your very eyes, and in the wilderness. There you saw how the Lord your God carried you, as a father carries his son, all the way you went until you reached this place. In spite of this, you did not trust in the Lord your God, who went ahead of you on your journey, in fire by night and in a cloud by day, to search out places for you to camp and to show you the way you should go. When the Lord heard what you said, he was angry and solemnly swore, 'No one from this evil generation shall see the good land I swore to give your ancestors, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh. He will see it, and I will give him and his descendants the land he set his feet on, because he followed the Lord wholeheartedly. Because of you, the Lord became angry with me also and said, You shall not enter it either. But your assistant, Joshua, son of Nun, will enter it. Encourage him, because he will lead Israel to inherit it. And the little ones that you said would be taken captive, your children who do not yet know good from bad, they will enter the land. I will give it to them and they will take possession of it. But as for you, turn around and set out toward the desert along the route to the Red Sea.' Then you replied, 'We have sinned against the Lord. We will go up and fight as the Lord our God commanded us.' So every one of you put on his weapons, thinking it easy to go up into the hill country. But the Lord said to me, 'Tell them, do not go up and fight, because I will not be with you. You will be defeated by your enemies.' So I told you, but you would not listen. You rebelled against the Lord's command, and in your arrogance you marched up into the hill country. The Amorites who lived in those hills came out against you. They chased you like a swarm of bees and beat you down from Seir all the way to Hormah. You came back and wept before the Lord, but he paid no attention to your weeping and turned a deaf ear to you. And so you stayed in Kadesh many days, all the time you spent there." Luke 5:29-6:11. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" Jesus answered them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." They said to him, "John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours go on eating and drinking." Jesus answered, "Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. In those days, they will fast." He told them this parable: "No one tears a piece out of a new garment to patch an old one. Otherwise, they will have torn the new garment, and the patch from the new will not match the old. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins. The wines will run out and the wineskins will be ruined. No, new wine must be poured into new wineskins. And no one, after drinking old wine, wants new, for they say, the old is better. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, "Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions." Then Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." On another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Get up and stand in front of everyone." So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil? To save life or to destroy it?" He looked around at them and then said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was completely restored. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were furious and began to discuss with one another what they might do to Jesus. Psalm 66, for the director of music, a song, a psalm. Shout for joy to God, all the earth. Sing the glory of his name. Make his praise glorious. Say to God, "How awesome are your deeds! So great is your power that your enemies cringe before you. All the earth bows down to you. They sing praise to you. They sing the praises of your name. Come and see what God has done, his awesome deeds for mankind. He turned the sea into dry land. They passed through the waters on foot. Come, let us rejoice in him. He rules forever by his power. His eyes watch the nations. Let not the rebellious rise up against him. Praise our God, all peoples. Let the sound of his praise be heard. He has preserved our lives and kept our feet from slipping. For you, God, tested us. You refined us like silver. You brought us into prison and laid burdens on our backs. You let people ride over our heads. We went through fire and water, but you brought us to a place of abundance. I will come to your temple with burnt offerings and fulfill my vows to you. Vows my lips promised and my mouth spoke when I was in trouble. I will sacrifice fat animals to you and an offering of rams. I will offer bulls and goats. Come and hear, all you who fear God. Let me tell you what he has done for me. I cried out to him with my mouth. His praise was on my tongue. If I had cherished sin in my heart, the Lord would not have listened. But God has surely listened and has heard my prayer. Praise be to God, who has not rejected my prayer or withheld his love from me." Proverbs 11:24-26. One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. People curse the one who hoards grain, but they pray God's blessing on the one who is willing to sell. Welcome back to another edition. Not a travel edition.
No.
But another edition of whatever this is with Jill and Brian. We'll call this episode 29.
29. From home base.
Yeah. We rarely, comparatively, get to sit down at home base and talk, although I think we plan to do this more.
Yeah. For whatever reason, the feedback is... People like to listen.
Gotta keep going. Figuring that out. Today is our 29th wedding anniversary. So 29 years ago. And I mean, we were, except for a minute, together for several years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And so 29 years ago today, how does that feel?
I have tears. I have tears in my eyes.
Yeah. What are those about?
I think it's, you said it right before we started. We shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've heard people say that, you know, we can make it, anybody can make it, but it's the truth of our story. Like, we shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Calling it quits and walking away would have been easier.
Yeah. Yeah, that we even made it to our first anniversary is a miracle.
Yeah.
And then about to get to 29 is a million miracles.
Literally, yeah.
So it's interesting, 20 of our years, 21 actually now, of our anniversaries involve this work.
Wow.
21 of those 29.
Wow.
Involve this work. And, you know, the years before that were crazy music business years of man competing and doing the dance and the dog and pony show and the competition and just trying to get it to work. And fortunately, we were able to do that. But those years seem like a distant time to me now.
I mean, those are really hard years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, some things are still coming up and healing some things with our kids. And
mm-hmm.
I would love to say that it was all worth it. Those hard years were worth it. And I think the only thing I can take away from them are the lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just hard. There's really not a lot of fondness looking back for me.
Yeah.
In that.
Mm-hmm.
For so many different reasons, but the clawing and scratching just for a scrap from anywhere.
Yeah.
And fighting against people, believers, for chart space.
Because
if you had chart space, you could tour. And, yeah.
You mentioned lessons. They're the only things that you bring. What would you say are some of those from those early years?
I would say, I guess from an artist's perspective, be really honest with yourself of why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do, and it, like, there's no way to make yourself be honest with yourself or anybody else. But if you're looking at somebody where they're at now and going, what's the one thing that you could take away? That would be the one thing that I would say to people. Because I remember even thinking, you know, if it's just for one person, it's going to make all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bunch of bullcrap.
Yeah.
If it's for one person, go sing to your grandma. She'll be your biggest fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be honest with yourself. Did God call you to do this? And,
I guess if I think of those years, I mean, I guess we're talking kind of music years, and that's how we found each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I'm grateful for that.
For sure.
And that we spoke the same language. And I could see you and fell in love because of creativity and the arts. And I was, you know, in the music business before, so had a long run with that. If I look back now and say, what is maybe the one of millions of lessons, I was determined from the time I was in my mid-teens. I was determined one way or the other. Nashville will be my home one way or the other. I will find a way to be in the music business. I will take no other option. Like, and that worked.
Yeah.
And but if I have to look back on it now, I would say I was chasing an idol the whole time. Like, I was thinking big things for God, but really studying the trade magazines more than I ever cracked open a scripture or said a prayer.
Same.
Just paying attention to what everybody else is doing and just how this whole thing works and how to navigate it, and wouldn't have succeeded any other way. It's an all-consuming thing, but in the end, it's like I remember finally coming awake much, much later, before Daily Audio Bible, but much, much later at the end of that time, and thinking, I have been trying to climb the wrong mountain. Like, this is just a business. It just was, it was scattered with fairy dust. Like,
yeah,
there was a whole kind of culture that was built around the entertainment model. And at the time, it was just exploding, and the church was buying at Oakline and Zinker. And so, not that it wasn't good. It, I mean, there's so much beauty and so much good. And I've spent, you know, years recollecting all the vinyl albums of my youth, and having listened to a lot of them, I realized, man, Christian music formed my theology much more than anything else. And I was raised in it, and it raised me and gave me purpose. And I'm not actually even trying to slam it. Some of it was so misguided, I can't even believe. But, you know, in the end, it was climbing the ladders of an industry that just had some magic over the top of it because it's entertainment. But just like any other industry. And so those were hard years because that's what kept us going.
Yeah.
What kept us even on the same page.
Yeah.
When we were so deeply drifting away from each other and from just disillusionment. And
yeah. And I think the difference between you and I and our stories of what we just stated is you have always been determined. You've never listened to outside voices. And as an artist, looking at that, I'm like, that's so admirable. Give me the formula for that. How did you do that? And then as your wife, I'm like, whoa, that was such a great frustration. And then the juxtaposition of my story is opinions formed everything. Perception is reality. And when you're kind of a big fish in a little pond, and then you get to a place like Nashville, which is, you're in the ocean. And then you realize, whoa, there are people here that are way better than you.
Yeah.
Then you start figuring out, like, what do I have to do to stand out? And then you just start compromising all kinds of things that you never had to before, because I grew up competing in music from a very young age. And I did well as far as winning trophies and a couple hundred dollars here and there. But it took me to a place where I was getting asked to sing a lot, and a lot of expectation with that. Well, you're doing it for the Lord, so your reward's in heaven. And so even then, like, doing it for nothing and selling yourself out.
Yeah,
and then just getting here, and it's like, whoa, we are not in Kansas anymore. That was the reality. Just like, I gotta up the game. And
so we got here and we landed here together, and you know, sailed the stars and crashed to earth before we ever ended up together for 29 years being married. So it's like our whole story is pretty here. In this land and in these years. You said competition a minute ago. That was how your story was. And then coming here and realizing the competition here is significant. How does competition play into our story, do you think?
Yeah, that's, I'd have to sit with that, because that's, it's very deep. And my story of competition goes beyond singing, like growing up in a competitive family.
Mm-hmm.
And the only girl and youngest. I'm also competing for space and attention and never came out of it. And then just, I think where it really went into overdrive for me is when you started the Daily Audio Bible. It wasn't something we sat down and talked about and planned. Like, you told me about it. And I thought, well, that's cute. And I think we've told this part of our story before. I would love to say that I was a supportive wife that got behind your idea. But I wasn't. It just was like, you're going to do something else that takes more time away from the family and more resources that we don't have already. And it just felt like, ugh, I don't even know what to do with this. But you said something to me that you had never said before, and that's the words, I believe God said to do this. And I was like, oh, wow. I cannot refute that. I've never heard you say these words before. So I thought you would do it for a year.
Yeah, me too.
And we would resume life. Like, we'd just pause it. And it did so well so fast. And I just felt like I got lost. Because we reversed our identities, our roles. You were always behind the scenes. And then I became behind the scenes to something that I didn't work my whole life to read the Bible or to be the wife of the person that read the Bible. I did not know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I did not do it well. And so I think that's where competition came into overdrive for me.
Yeah.
Just a loss of identity. And we still never had the conversation like, no, this is now a part of our lives. It was, I think the thing you kept saying to me is the sooner you get on board, the faster we can go together.
Yeah, I remember that.
But I had no idea how to do that.
So I think one of the things I'm hearing, if I were listening, it would be like insightful for people to understand that ministry isn't a pass. Like, you don't get a red hotline phone to God.
No.
And, you know, delivered at your ordination, which would be so cool.
Here's your new Bible and your
engraved Bible, and here's your hotline. You just push this button and God will be there immediately. Yeah. Tell you what to do.
This is the pin. And I think I need to back up and say that I also, aside from everything that I just said, came in as broken of a human being as I possibly could be.
Yeah.
And, you know, did some courses and went to some conferences along the way and felt like I was getting some healing. And but the problem was all of the infection had never been scraped out first. That has to also be stated. That
no, I would say 29 years ago today, we were very broken people. Somehow in love, but things were beyond comprehension broken.
Yeah.
So yeah, having even just gotten through, I guess we're just touching on the music business years, because it's crazy that 21 of our anniversaries are Daily Audio Bible anniversaries. That's just kind of hitting me.
Yeah.
That only 8 other anniversaries, you know, that's just crazy.
It is crazy.
And how we got out of that alive. Well, everything's a miracle. I think probably most marriages are miracles. Because there isn't anything that's going to challenge everything.
Right.
Like being married. And so,
so I think that we're not exactly sure why we're here to talk about this. It just felt, important for us to recognize this milestone, because in our brokenness, we treated our anniversary very frivolous. It was almost like a chore. Like, I got to figure out something to do for this date. And
even if we remembered it, because we forgot the exact date for a while.
Yeah. Wow. And so we really are not here to just focus on, you know, how terrible things were. I think we're here to celebrate the fact that we're here. And to not oversimplify that we're just here.
Yeah.
Because we realize there's a lot of people that are out there that are maybe in a lonely marriage, that are divorced, that are hoping for love. There's both people maybe working on it, and they're still worlds apart.
Yeah.
And we can't possibly sit here and tell you the depth of our brokenness.
Right. Well, we can say it was utterly
disastrous.
I mean, marriage will make you face everything that you can face in life if you stay, and it will become the most beautiful thing possible that you'll ever have in your life, but it will make you face everything, and we've faced everything conceivable over the years.
So I think from a biblical perspective, if we're talking about how the Bible describes a woman, I guess for me, this is where I'll come from. We see, especially right now where we're at in chronological, we're learning about the covenant mm-hmm. of God between God and the Israelites, and how when they turn their back on God and they're part of a covenantal relationship, they are described as an adulterous woman.
Yeah.
And even the character of a woman, I say this often, you and I have grown up in some form of Christian culture our entire life.
Yes.
Our childhood was, if the door was open, church, we were there.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond. It does not exemplify anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because we grew up in this culture and I still did not get it until just a few years ago, pulling everything apart. The character of a woman, I heard this term growing up, Jezebel spirit.
Mm-hmm.
She has a Jezebel spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody could define what that was. We just categorized women or labeled them. She has a Jezebel spirit. There is like a certain type of woman within the culture that I grew up with that I became.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain charm and a certain aspect of being a woman that you know how to wield that
mm-hmm.
to get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Highly manipulative.
Mm.
And if you don't recognize it, you don't know that it's wrong, not good. And I'm just saying this from a biblical perspective, because if I had went into my story with all the brokenness, it's like looking for that self-worth through accolades or through validation, looking to be validated. I can see it so clearly now that if a woman's not careful, she will use her charm and anything else she can to, for lack of a better word, seduce to get what she wants. It's manipulative, it's seductive, in hopes to get what you think will make you complete.
Yeah.
And you get to the Proverbs 31 woman, and it's like, whoa, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
All of the things that she's doing is not the point, it's the character.
Yeah.
And so a few years ago, our world crashed down.
Mm-hmm.
Like our marriage imploded.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sink or swim.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I had to do in the work, and this was without a single therapist, like this was me and God in the silence. And I wasn't sure there would ever be anybody else in my world.
Yeah.
Was one, how do I define love?
Mm-hmm.
And what are my values?
Mm-hmm.
And I did not know the answer to either one, and realized that the pursuit of my life was the next big thing.
Yeah.
The next best big thing, period. Oh, but for God. And what I lacked was the knowledge of how to be a woman of character.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get there so fast. Like, I'll just figure this out, you know, resume life, fix everything. But I'm looking at the sheet of values that I printed out, and I couldn't identify what mattered to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really long process. And I think the most eye-opening thing for me was I did not know how to define love.
Yeah.
And so when you don't know that, then you have to look and go, what have I been actually doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then you sit with the sadness, the grief of none of this has mattered.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally all of this was a clanging gong. Nothing was done in love or with love. And just so much anger and rage within me from past trauma and bitterness and resentment.
Yeah.
You know, so now to read scripture, even in the setting of a marriage and a covenant, don't let the sun go down on your anger or your wrath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not like quick fix it, hurry up and get it out. But it's like, this is things that we've learned in therapy, like do the repair work as fast as you can.
Right.
Because the longer you let it sit, the harder it is to do. So now the Bible comes to life in a whole new way. So, you know, from where we are in our brokenness, it's like husbands lay down your life for your wife the way that Christ laid down his life for the church, which I fully believe, but I also believe that doesn't work unless both people are doing that together.
Yeah.
So just also these other tools that we've learned, do what's best for the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The decisions that you make, what is best for the betterment of the relationship? Not for me, not for you in this moment, but there might be a right solution for you in this moment, and there might be a different right solution for me. But we have to let go of those and say, what's best for us together in this moment? And I realize I didn't do that well or at all.
So you mentioned things imploding, and it's like looking back, not that we're completely out of the debris field, but like it was imploded from the get-go. Like mm-hmm. we lived on a time bomb that ultimately woke us up.
Yeah.
And we had to make some choices. And one of those choices was that we had to get into a little boat.
Yeah.
Together, alone, and row out beyond the noise. And make some choices.
Well, I think there's a lot to that. You get into a boat alone, and you've never done that before. You don't know how to do that. And I had to trust you getting into that boat. And I didn't realize that part of my issue in life is trust and safety.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of things for self-protection.
Yeah.
Because that's how I regulated. That's how I coped.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, like, certain survival things. And then avoidance is part of both of our stories. So anything too hard, we always just, like, don't get too close to it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it now. I just didn't know how to get into that boat with you. And feeling like I owed so many people explanations and to hear their their opinions.
Yeah.
Which, you know, all of these things go back to childhood brokenness.
I mean, that's part of the work is...
Yeah.
The hard archaeology of your own self to do the work to realize the imprinting that is placed on every child from their parents and
mm-hmm.
the things that are normalized that might be completely dysfunctional.
Right.
But they feel normal because you grew up inside of an environment that you learned how to navigate and thought it was normal like everybody, but mm-hmm. it's so toxic and not normal.
Right. Like I think back going over to people's houses as a child, like friends' houses that had very stable homes
mm-hmm.
and thinking, wow, this is boring.
Mm.
Like there, what's, yawn. Like, where's the chaos?
Yeah.
There was love and there was safety and it was like very unfamiliar.
You know, ministry doesn't actually help with any of life's struggles. There's so many misconceptions about people that are called into ministry as if that's some kind of elevation, some kind of God is closer to this person that's a pastor or closer to this person that is a professional Christian in some sort of way, leading. I mean, I grew up in a ministry, in a pastor's home, an evangelist's home. I would have to say, in my experience, it's harder. It's harder because you have to do so much in front of other people. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to do so much to do your very best to be authentic, but also know there's expectations that you pretty much have your crap together because you're leading other people before God. And so the idea is that it somehow there's a grace that's easier when it's not really true. There's a grace for the work, but nobody gets to have a relationship with God by proxy. You have to either have one or not.
Right.
And that has to either shape you or not.
Right.
And, you know, when you're compelled to look a certain way, especially when you've grown up, like, kind of living a double life from the get-go, like, this is how you put your face on, this is how you present, and then this is how it really is, that makes it even more difficult, I think, in terms of ministry. Like, I have so much grace and compassion for anybody called to it, because it's probably one of the harder jobs in the world.
Yeah. And I think it'd be worth saying that the only elevation in that is what the people do to the pastors, to the, especially now, like the Christian celebrities. We elevate them. We put them on this plateau because sometimes it's what they're showing us. They're showing us all the shiny, sparkly, glittery, glitzy. They've got it right. Everyone else has it wrong. And do the formula, follow the formula, and you too can become this.
But all of them are facing struggles that everybody faces.
Absolutely. No one is exempt. It's just a lot of times we hide the struggles in private so that you can still think this shiny, the shiny hasn't wore off. And I'm encouraged, the more people that I meet that are like, I didn't realize I also grew up with this double life in church, out of church situation.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. Like, it's really hard because you don't realize that you're creating an alternate reality. There's no place to put the pain, the injustice. And I realized that music was that place for me. I didn't realize this till you told me of someone that you worked with years ago that said that to you, that grew up in a very similar situation. And she said singing gave her a place to put the pain. And when you said that, like, it just pierced my heart, and I was like, wow. Didn't realize that music was a sort of a a regulation.
Right. It's crazy to know what we know now and how much that whole piece of things was, even the pursuit of it was for nervous system regulation.
And how many things we did in church as a means and as a form of regulation. And now I just have to look and go, I'm not sure. I just was regulating my nervous system.
Sure.
A lot of people regulating their nervous system.
Yeah.
Or even a means of, like, a place to put the injustice when you can't speak of it.
Yeah.
So the rebuilding, I mean, when we say, like, we literally dug up, chiseled up, jackhammered up the foundation, burned it down, that's what we mean.
Yeah, bulldozers, like, clear the plot. This has been a house built on sand.
Dynamite.
We're going to go somewhere. We got to build this on rock. And I mean, it's a miracle. 29. I mean, it's not a miracle that we're not well suited, because we are. But our brokenness has been significant. And that's the thing, is sometimes you don't get the help that you need until there's, like, no other choice. Instead of just realizing, no, something's wrong, I need help.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the spiritual bypassing of that.
Right.
So, yeah, we had to tear everything to pieces.
And I think I'd never want to tell people this is what you should do because this is what we did. I am not a big fan of that at all. But I know there are so many people here in this community that have never engaged in therapy, any therapeutic work, because we just don't need that. We don't need what those people are talking about and giving. I can't say enough how much of a myth I wish to dispel on that. Because you don't have to go very far to hear that narrative, or even like all the therapy I need I can find on YouTube or podcasts, right, or books. Or
yeah,
I would encourage anybody that if you're like, I think there might be some brokenness, there might be some things, whether your marriage is in disaster or not, and both people have to be willing
to do the work,
to do the work and to do an internal look. It can't be just pray my spouse will go to therapy and the therapist will tell them everything that's wrong with them.
Yeah. That's, no, there's, it's, I mean, everybody's broken.
Yeah.
In this world. And usually we develop our kind of personality and our persona around the places that are wounded so that we're protecting ourselves and the broken places because we don't want those things to happen again. And so we begin young, very, very, very young, to perceive how the world works. And we get highly developed on how we get things to happen in the world that we believe in. And that's so built on wounds and brokenness that it really requires an honest look at how you got to where you are. It's not unlike things in the Bible, like we're both in Deuteronomy. And so, you know, Moses is gonna die. He's got some new laws to put in place, but one of his main objectives in that whole book is to remind people how they got where they are standing. Like, this is how you got to be who you are.
Yeah.
These are the stories. These are the places that we broke covenant. These are the places that we kept covenant. This is what the Lord our God has done for us. But also, this is what we've done to ourselves. Like, this is how you got here. If you forget how you got here and you don't know how you got here, you don't know who you are. And I guess that's truth. If you're living your life in relationship or whatever broken in some ways, you're compensating for that brokenness and believing that there's healing. But if you don't know how you got there,
right,
if you haven't actually just been able to face how you got here,
yeah,
then you really don't know who you are.
1,000%.
And that's hard work. Yeah. But, you know, it's work that's been really revealing.
Yeah.
So,
and I would like to share that even with the individual work that you and I have done, there's different themes to our brokenness.
Sure.
We're not doing the same work. And I want to just say that for me, I went away to an intensive, which was some of the best therapy I've ever done, and a very necessary first step. The deep-rooted work that I had to do was the moment that I came face-to-face with self-hatred and didn't even know to call it that. Didn't even know there was a single root of that in my life, let alone the root that has been rooted to everything. And that moment changed the game for me.
Yeah.
When I could learn to have compassion for myself and for the girl, the teenager, the woman that made such reckless choices for whatever reason that she did, to come face to face and to forgive her was the first step for me. And in doing so, I feel as if what has changed inside of me is I can forgive so quickly now, instead of holding grudges for days and weeks or getting any chance to retaliate and not even know that I'm actually doing that. I feel like that work has helped me be quick to forgive and so much more compassionate to other broken people. And at the same time, it's given me like a severe intolerance for pride, because I was so prideful for so long. And how they all snowball together. When you learn these things, you see how they all, how and why they work, and how you double down on things that you're just not willing to give up. And I'm grateful for that work personally. Because you cannot fulfill me. You cannot complete me. No person, not my children, not my grandchildren, not a pet, not a parent, not, I have to be complete with myself, knowing who I am, how God created me, how God sees me, where my shortcomings are, and quick to repent to God.
Yeah.
Repentance is not a one and done.
No, it's a lifestyle.
I love the story of when you're little trying to figure out the message and you asking that man at church, like, what's 70 times seven? To try to figure out the formula of forgiveness. And, you know, we do that daily sometimes.
Yeah, forgiveness is a process. Repentance is a lifestyle. And that's just how it works, actually. Healing is not a straight line formula any more than God forgiving us 70 times, seven times literally.
Yeah.
It's a choice every day. And I think the Bible kind of reminds us that we are telling the story of our lives, and that's happening in thoughts and words and choices and actions. And all those things matter.
Yes.
And the damage matters, because it's all got to get dealt with it at some point.
Yeah. And healing is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard work. And especially if you're, if you've grown up avoiding, avoiding was part of your coping, or what was taught to you. You just avoid what you don't want to deal with. It's hard, but I think you said it earlier. I think it's true. We would not have had to do as deep of repair work if we wouldn't have tackled these things early yeah. on. Just didn't know how.
Yeah.
So sometimes healing is 5 steps forward and 10 steps back. And then 1 step forward and then 1 step forward. And some days it feels like, are we ever going to get beyond this? But I think if I'm hearing you lately, I think you're hopeful that we're getting beyond.
Yeah. The word repair couldn't be a better word. And so I'm grateful to have that knowledge, grateful to have made it to 29.
Yeah, me too. And because so many people are listening, and because so many people might relate to anything that we said, this is so deeply personal to me that I really want to just say that it's never too late to start the work, especially if you are a parent and a child. If you've never admitted your wrongs to your children, if they've never heard your struggle, if they've never heard you say you're sorry.
Right.
That's a really good first step.
Yeah.
Everything is modeled behavior.
And we're not saying something we haven't done. We've done this work.
Yeah. And still do this work. Things still come up, and it's not like, well, I already said I'm sorry, so can we just move on? It's like, there's pain right here in this moment. Even with you and I, like, it took a long time to learn this lesson.
Yeah.
If it's coming up, it still hurts, and we have to address it.
Right.
So I just want you to know how grateful I am for staying, for working.
Yeah.
And that sometimes people do the work, and it doesn't work out. They don't get the outcome. And there's a lot of grief to that.
Yeah.
But even with the work that I did with defining love and values at the beginning, I can see so clearly now, love really does endure all things.
Yeah.
And if it hasn't endured, the work that you've done has not endured. I know this is like a a huge oversimplification, and there's not enough science for me to live out to say that's debatable. But I would say, with what I have learned and what I have walked out, it wasn't love if it didn't conquer all. Mm. And then, you know, we blame God. We get resentful. I prayed. I did everything right. But love has to be clear on both parts in any relationship.
Yeah. Well, I can honestly say I loved you with all my heart 29 years ago today. And I love you with all of my heart today.
I love you with all of my heart.
Yeah.
And I hope for, Lord willing, another 29 years.
Hope so. However many there are, I'm going to be in love with you. You are the one.
You are the one. I'm proud of you and the work that you've done, and I'm proud of us.
And I'm proud of you and the work you've done. It's been really hard work.
But it's not been for nothing.
No.
And my hope, truly, like, my hope is that it trickles down to our kids and to our grandkids, to their kids, their kids.
Yeah. That's how a generational curse gets broken.
Mm-hmm.
Change, repentance,
yeah.
Ownership, unveiling, being honest.
Yeah.
And sharing your story.
Yeah. And it's hard. You lose some people along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And some you have to, and some you just know you're going to if you choose to stay and fight and do the work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot of grief.
Mm-hmm.
You have to mourn the losses and celebrate the victories.
Make the new memories.
Make new memories. And am I grateful for that?
Yeah. Well, this has been dang uplifting.
I hope it's been helpful, though, for...
Yeah, you're getting, I guess, raw, honest discussion. All we felt was impressed. We maybe should have a talk. And this is that talk. And hopefully us being honest and transparent and true matters. I don't know. I mean, we can go and go and go, but I think... I don't know that there's more to say right now.
Yeah.
In this moment. If you have listened and want to reach out when we do these whatever this is talks, you can reach out at Brian and Jill at dailyaudiobible.com. Brian and Jill at dailyaudiobible.com. Can't promise that we can reach back. We it's overwhelming on some days, the amount of interaction, but I can tell you that we will hear you, and I can tell you that we love you. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, baby.
I'm really glad to be married to you.
I'm so grateful to have what I always wanted.
Yeah, me too.
Best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I love being in the boat with you.
I love being in our boat.
We should have gone under beneath that blackened sky. Every word of thunder, every truth a lie.
You shattered my picture, burned every bridge in flame. Two ghosts at the table, too tired to speak our names.
But something held us weightless when we reached the final page.
And I couldn't see, turn the wind,
calm the waves. Little boat of love, we live through an unspeakable storm. By the grace of God, our frozen hearts were reborn. We forgave the unthinkable, we survived the impossible. No angry sea can sink us now. No force on earth can break. break this vow.
I remember your trembling when you said I'm not worth saving. I remember my silence. Felt like I was caving in.
But mercy rushed between us like a tide that wouldn't turn.
Washed over all the shipwrecks, every scar,
every burn. Something more than just our will held the pieces in our hands, turned our ruin into shelter, built a harbor from the sand. Little boat of love, we lived through an unspeakable storm. By the grace of God, our frozen hearts were reborn. We forgave the unthinkable. We survived the impossible. No angry sea can sink us now. No force on earth can break this vow. Every tear, every trauma, ringing like a song.
Wild, wild mercy, no other place we belong.
Little boat of love, we lived through an unspeakable storm.
By the grace of God, our frozen hearts were reborn. We forgave the unthinkable. We survived the impossible. No angry